This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome into the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day show, presented by Ameren here on the Cardinals Radio Network. Our first show of 2021. Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler with you here. Claibs, Happy New Year, man. Glad we get a chance to hopefully, maybe, start talking about some stuff on the field here in the not-too-distant future, because we've all been waiting for January to come so we could get all the business taken care of that normally happens in December.
Well, the best thing about 21 is 20 is in the rearview mirror, and you're right. And I kind of think we're going to see some things unfold. We're getting closer to spring training as far as the traditional dates, but there's still a lot of work to be done with regard to when we're going to do it, how many games we're going to have, and just how spring training is going to look from a health standpoint. But I think at some point here in the very near future, some decisions are going to have to be made. We'll write them down in pencil like we did last season, because as we know, these things are quite fluid, but we're going to have to start at some point soon.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, look, we're 6 weeks away from when spring training is supposed to start. And, you know, earlier this week, there was a report that Major League Baseball and the Players Association have understood that right now everything's going as scheduled, because that's what the collective bargaining agreement says. So Major League Baseball can't push anything back without approval from the union. So right now, it's supposed to be report on time, start on time, and we'll see where COVID takes us. So something's going to have to happen with all these free agents, Claibs, because we only got 6 weeks to sort it out.
Oh, I think we're going to have some guys in the late night trying to do deals leading right up to and including spring training. And there may be some guys that'll be late, because there's a lot of guys out there. And I think everybody's just trying to keep their finger on the pulse of the market and make sure that they don't overspend or in some cases underspend. And it's something that patience is going to still be required, much like we saw in 2020.
You know, and look, there are a lot of different layers to this, you know, and we are, you know, here in St. Louis, closely following what's going on with Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright. And, you know, in particular, Yadi, Claibs, I mean, his marketplace probably is going to be largely determined by what happens with JT Realmuto. You know, we've seen the Padres and Mets make moves that would seemingly take them out of the running for Yadi. The Phillies would make some sense, but they're in on Realmuto. They want to keep him. So, you know, and that's kind of where it seems to be, like teams like Washington, maybe the Yankees. They have other options in place, and I think, you know, we may get some, I don't want to say final, you know, anything final, but we may start get some more information on what it would take to keep Yadi around once we kind of see where Realmuto goes and what the rest of the catching marketplace looks like.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Kevin, and I think here's the other X factor that goes into this. Yadi probably wants to play for a team that's a good team compared to just being with another team that didn't have the Cardinals logo on it. So I think when you look at that number that gets reduced even more, there aren't as many options out there as you might think.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point that, you know, when we look at, you know, free agency here, there are only a few really high-end free agents that people are talking about. And then there's a large group that are in that next level down. Good players, some of them even everyday players, but they're just not at that super high level. And what I'm really interested to see, Claibs, is what the money looks like for that second tier and how many years they're looking at, right? I mean, you know, how many of these guys are in free agency for the first time looking at this and saying, wow, this is literally the worst year ever to be a free agent with COVID and the collective bargaining agreement coming up at the end of 2021. I wonder if we'll see guys that are trying to get multi-year deals to cover themselves, or guys that are going to take one-year deals because the money isn't what they were hoping.
Well, I think you're going to see some guys that are going to have long-term deals as we've been accustomed to. But I think you're going to have a lot more guys that are going to find themselves with one-year deals, maybe one in an option, but nothing of the long-term variety that they probably hoped they were going to get before COVID struck.
Yeah, I think that's going to be – and I think that's – again, that's kind of what we're looking at, too, with the Cardinals moving forward. We don't have any idea yet, you know, what exactly they could be looking at, but – you know, with the number of people that might take, you know, relatively inexpensive one-year deals, I think that may be an area to keep our eyes on when it comes to a bat or two that might be able to give you a little bit of help, even if it's not someone that answers every question you have by themselves.
Yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot of questions that are going to have answers at a very late stage of what we call the offseason. And everybody's kind of, with the exception of San Diego, and there have been a couple other teams that have made some nice moves, everybody's kind of sitting back. But here's my concern. And I'll even start in our division with the teams that have already taken a step back with regard to the 2021 season and have not shown the propensity. They're trying to improve their ball clubs, saving money on the salary side, moving talent around. That's my greater concern, that we don't have this become a widespread issue throughout baseball, because the players aren't going to like it. The fans certainly aren't going to like it. And I'm not sure if it bodes well for the league itself if we continue to see this trend.
Now, we're gonna talk a little bit more about the Central Division later this hour. David Kaplan's going to join us from Chicago, give us the latest on what's going on with the Cubs in the wake of the Yu Darvish trade that went down last week. On top of that, we'll catch up with Mike Gersh next hour. Also, we're going to have some fun in this show tonight, too. We've got a couple of the 2020 Cardinals Hall of Famers joining us tonight. John Tudor a little later this hour, Tommy Herr next hour. So plenty of great stuff coming your way here on the Cardinals Countdown to opening day. Even though we don't have free agent signings or big trades to break down yet this week, we got plenty to do, and we're going to continue the baseball conversation with our good friend John Rooney coming up next here on the Cardinals Countdown to opening day show, presented by Amron on the Cardinals Radio Network. Right, we're rolling along on the Cardinals Countdown to opening day show, presented by Amron here on the Cardinals Radio Network, and we're into the new year. It's time for us to start catching up with some of the friends we haven't talked to in a while. And right now we get a chance to talk to our friend John Rooney. Of course, John, happy new year. Hope everything's well. Hope everybody's healthy, and good to get a chance to talk to you.
Yeah, same here, Kevin. Klabe, it's always good to join you. And let's get to some baseball. I hope we have some news that we can pass along to fans before too long about what's going to take place in 2021. But we're going to have baseball at some point, and I can't wait for it.
You know, John, I think you hit the nail on the head. We're all waiting on news. I mean, it'd be nice to know when if we're going to have a DH or not. I don't know if spring training will start on time. We don't know what that's going to look like. But I agree. We're going to have a game. We don't know when it's going to start, but we're getting closer to it than we were, let's say, last year, because I think they've got a better handle on things. But still a lot of things in front of them to do. So with that said, a lot of things have happened off the field, especially in our division, where the Cubs seem like they raised the white flag and surrender as they move some players. Milwaukee is kind of in a holding pattern. Cincinnati, I think, is taking a step back, especially in the pitching department. And then you have Pittsburgh, who has basically surrendered for this year and the foreseeable future.
Well, that you have. And I'd like to know what's going to happen. I'm sure all Cardinal Nation would. With Yadier Molina and with Adam Wainwright. I get more questions about them than anybody because they're so well-liked and so well-loved, and for good reason. I mean, battery mates going way back to when Wainwright came up in 2006 and turned starter in 2007. It's just a great history, and I know Mo is doing his best to try to keep them, but what are the ground rules coming up? Are we going to be able to have fans at some point? What kind of budget is going to be available? Those are all questions that have to be answered. And, yeah, it looks like the Cubs have taken a step back, and other teams within the division that if Mo can get the pitching lined up with Mike Schilt and with Mike Maddux and with Brian Eversgird, I think that's going to take the Cardinals a long way, because that is a strength of the team right along with the team defense. And I wouldn't mind having Colton Wong back either, but we have to see how all this plays out and what the ground rules will be. And right now, we don't know.
No, and, you know, we talked to Mo a couple of weeks ago, John, and he said exactly what you just did. There's a lot of information that's being sought. There are a few teams that are making moves, but not many. You know, it's like two or three teams that are really out there in an aggressive posture right now.
Well, it looks like San Diego wants to win right now, but what are the ground rules? I mean, when are we going to play? A thorn in their side has been the team just north of them at Dodger Stadium, and it looks like they've really put the challenge to the Dodgers to try to equal what the Padres have done. They have a good lineup. They can strike. We saw that in Game 2 of the playoff series when it looked like the Cardinals might be able to sweep that series in the three-gamer to get started. But they're a good ball club. The Dodgers will be good again, and I think Houston will be good again. But in the East, we'll see what the Mets are able to come up with and how much improved the Marlins are. They made some big strides, and they've made some changes to their overall operation. It will be a very interesting year once we find out, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and then we'll see what free agents end up signing and what trades will take place at that point. And I do agree with Mo where he thought that the normal December activity would take place somewhere in January or maybe early February compared to what we've had in the past. All bets are off in that regard, but it's fun to talk about it. It's fun to think about it, but it will be even more fun to see what happens when they get all the rules worked out.
In 2020, we saw some changes, the seven-inning doubleheader, the three-batter minimum. Anything you'd like to see in 21? I've asked this question to a few different people, and I seem like I'm getting the same answer, where everybody liked the seven-inning doubleheader format. The other things we're still trying to figure out, but what stood out for you that you liked?
Well, I love the seven-inning doubleheader format. I've loved that since I worked the minor leagues in the old American Association back in the early 80s when I was in Oklahoma City, and then at the Cardinals AAA level down in Louisville. It makes for a much quicker day. You get those two games in. Your pitching isn't burnt out. Even if you have an extra inning game of a couple, three innings, it doesn't just tear up your bullpen for another week or 10 days or force the organization to make several moves just to try to keep the arms fresh. And that's what I liked about it at the minor league level, and I think it worked out well at the major league level. It worked out for the Cardinals where they could make the playoffs by playing so many doubleheaders to make up for the 17 days they missed when they had that COVID hit. So I like that part of it. I don't like the three-batter minimum. I don't think it makes that much of a difference overall. You're gonna have some matchups in mind when they bring the pitcher in. And the left-handed pitcher, if he has a pretty good changeup, he'll probably be able to maneuver some right-handed batters. But I didn't really care for the runner at second base to start extra innings. It was all right for last season, but going forward, I'm glad they didn't have that available for the postseason.
John, we appreciate you catching up with us here on the show. Obviously, Happy New Year to you. Stay healthy, and we'll look forward to hopefully at some point, fingers crossed, knocked on wood, we'll all be at a ballpark somewhere near us here in the not-too-distant future. But thank you for joining us.
Well, I'm with you, Kevin. I can't wait until we can have a show where we're talking about who did what in the second or third inning to help the Cardinals win a game, or what pitcher looked good, and what young player that has impressed everybody and getting ready for a season. I can't wait to get back to that. But Happy New Year, everybody, and look forward to talking to you guys again soon.
And many thanks to our good friend John Rooney for jumping on the show with us here for the first time in 2021. I want to remind you that you can gear up for the season with a subscription to Cardinals Magazine, your premier source for Cardinals coverage in season and out. Sign up at cardinals.com/magazine, or you can call 314-345-9000. Coming up next, we're going to talk to 2020 Cardinals Hall of Fame inductee, well, soon to be inductee. He's been selected for induction now. We're going to talk to John Tudor when we come back here on the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day show, presented by Ameren on the Cardinals Radio Network. All right, we're back in on the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day show presented by Ameren here on the Cardinals Radio Network. Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler with you here in our first show of the new year. And I think it's fitting, Claibs, that in our first show of the new year, we're going to be celebrating the guys that are going into the Cardinals Hall of Fame. And one of those guys joining us right now, that's John Tudor, of course, a guy that Cardinals fans know and love, selected for induction into the Cardinals Hall of Fame in 2020. And very much looking forward to all of the ceremonies that didn't get to happen last year, happening now this year. John, congratulations. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate you. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. And hey, before we get started here, hey Mike, I want to know, you getting yourself in shape for 2022 camp?
John, I am ready to go. John, when you see me, you will be shocked. I will be ready to go. I am in the best shape of my life. And
you look great. You look good last year. I mean, you look good physically last year. You just can't play.
Yeah, that's it. That's all it is. I mean, you know, I look the part, man. It's just the skill set that has not followed me as I've gotten older. Let's just put it that way. But I'll be ready to contribute in some way, shape, or form. Trust me.
Sounds good.
when you got the call from Bill DeWitt that you were going to be part of the Cardinals Hall of Fame, and you played with some guys on the that are in the Hall of Fame, probably played against a few, but what was it like for you when you got that call?
Well, it was great. I mean, I was, obviously, hoping to get the call. It was, a great honor, obviously, to be especially being selected by the fans. That was, that makes it even sweeter for that to be the case. And I've said this a million times, the people in St. Louis have always been so, so good to me. And every time I go back there, I come back here, my wife says, she's like, hey, you're walking around, you got a big head now. Like, what's the deal? And I said, well, I've just been in St. Louis and, everybody, not everybody, but some people I see who say, hey, look, you were my favorite player. And it's always good for that. Always good to get back to St. Louis and see great baseball people.
John, I'm gonna flash back a little further. Take me back to your arrival in St. Louis. I mean, obviously, 1985, after the fact, turned out to be an amazing year. Almost won the Cy Young Award. Of course, the team had a lot of success. You guys went to the World Series. But what were your expectations? What were your understandings of what it was like in St. Louis when you arrived before you had to experience it?
I mean, I didn't really have any expectations of what it was like to be a Cardinal. I mean, that took a little while to figure that out. When you're around the Gibsons and the Brocks and the Floods and any number of guys, Shandys and those type of guys on a semi-regular basis, you kind of learn what it's like. I mean, all these guys are really – every Cardinal Hall of Famer I've ever met has always been such a class act. And speaks volumes to the organization and the people in St. Louis, because the people in St. Louis create the player. The reality of it is, I think, or create the persona of the player. And I can remember, kind of touching on your question a little bit. I can remember sitting in the dugout when I was with the Pirates for that one year in St. Louis, and sitting next to Rick Rodin and Larry McWilliams, and Candelaria was probably in someone that area, depending upon which one of us happened to be pitching that day, and watching the Cardinals play, watching the way they played defense, looking at the ballpark, seeing the sea of red, and listening to the fans and saying, man, wouldn't this be a great place to play? And, I mean, I never in a million years, I didn't really think it would be me. I knew that one of us was going to go in the offseason because they had just traded to me, and they didn't need pitching. They needed just about everything else. I was really happy when it was me, when I got the phone call.
Hey, when you got to St. Louis, it was a lot of different personalities on that ball club, and you found a way to fit in with everybody else. Who did you learn the most from about the game in that team that you were with, other than Whitey? I mean, Whitey was obviously the catalyst because he brought a lot of guys in, but as a teammate, who did you learn the most from?
I mean, you kind of learn how to carry yourself by watching Ozzie, and you learn – Not that Ozzy wasn't competitive, but you learn how important being really ultra competitive was from somebody like Jack Clark, and how to be a good teammate from a guy like Danny Cox. And you say there's a bunch of different personalities on that team, but there's a bunch of different personalities on every team. But that one really meshed. I can honestly say that I think everybody in there got along. I mean, we have our moments. Everybody has their moments where somebody says something stupid or does something, and you're mad at him for a couple innings, but that's just being an athlete.
Absolutely. No, I got to believe, John, I know it's a different era when it comes to pitching. I mean, it was definitely more about getting guys to put the ball in play than it is now, which is all about the strikeout. Had to be pretty comforting looking around the guys you mentioned on the Pittsburgh side, looking at how they played defense. Had to be pretty nice knowing those guys were behind you with all that speed, all that range, and all that ability to make plays for you.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't take long to figure out that if I do my job and make them put the ball in play, good things are going to happen, 99 times out of 100. And, a lot of mistakes that I made, we made as a staff, never showed up in the line score because of that defense, with Andy and Willie and Vince in the outfield and Terry and Tommy and Ozzie and Jack making the plays at first base. It was a great team. It really was. It was the best team I was ever on, without a doubt. And my biggest disappointment my entire career was Game 7. So
Well, welcome to that club. John Tudor, Cardinal Hall of Famer, is our guest. And John, when you talk about you can make a mistake and somebody could cover you, that seems like we're going in a different direction today with the game where guys want to strike everybody out. The defense may not be as good behind you. Do you think a guy like yourself, because you weren't a hard thrower, but you knew how to spot the ball, you think a guy like you would get noticed as much as maybe at the time when you were pitching?
I don't know. I mean, I came up throwing in the low 90s, low mid-90s. And, you know, over the years with, you know, arm problems, my velocity tailed off quite a bit. I mean, I was still throwing 80, 88, 89, that 85 season in St. Louis. And, you know, back in those days, you know, that was a little bit above average fastball. And there were really only so many Todd Worrells in the game at that point. Now it's all about velocity. I have to think scouting a pitcher as a big league scout is just pulling a trigger on a gun. From what I see, these guys don't learn how to pitch in the minor league because they throw so damn hard they don't have to. And they blow people away in the minor leagues. And then when you get to the big leagues, it's a whole new ballgame. You know, big league hitters they're not just a step above. They're a couple of yards above, you know, minor league hitters in their discipline and their ability to make adjustments during the course of a game, which, in my opinion, is the biggest difference between a big league player and a minor league player, is the ability to make adjustments during the course of a game and figure out, A, what is that hitter trying to do to me as a pitcher? Or B, what is that pitcher? What's he want to do to me right now? What's he want me to try and do? I heard somebody make a comment one time that a big league hitter can time a rocket ship, seen enough pitches. You know, when you just turn around and throw 98 down the middle of the plate over and over and over again, sooner or later you're going to get burned.
You know, it's obviously changed the way the bullpens are used too. I mean, I look at, you know, just 85 right as an example. I mean, you and Joaquin Andujar, Danny Cox, you guys, the innings totals you guys had in that season would blow away almost everybody today. I mean, you threw 275 innings and had 14 complete games. I mean, that number of complete games is a 5-6 year run even for a Cy Young caliber guy now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different game, and the Gibsons in the eras before me were throwing 325 innings and 330 innings and completing 17, 18, 19 games. So the game is going kind of in the wrong direction, I guess. I guess if it is the wrong direction, I don't know. I'm not a computer guy, so I guess I don't really understand the game anymore. But the game's changed. It changes. It changes over years. And like I said, we threw less innings than the Gibsons did. And you go back before that, although I don't know, you know, those guys were starting, you know, 50 games back in the 20s and stuff. But it's, the game changes. There's no doubt the game has changed.
Hey, final question for me, John Tudor. When you were coming up through the minors and obviously getting to the major leagues, one of the things we don't see today are kids who learn how to pitch out of trouble until they get to the big leagues. When did you learn how to make those adjustments? At what level in your baseball career that you have to learn how to pitch out of trouble and make adjustments, something you touched on a little earlier?
I came up primarily, I was a reliever early in my career. I mean, I would relieve the first two-thirds of the season because I wasn't a high draft pick. I wasn't a prospect. So I would relieve, you know, two-thirds of the season and get to start the last third. You know, up until probably my second year, my second full year in AAA is when I became a full-time starter. And there was a banker of all people in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, where the Red Sox AAA team was, because we didn't have pitching coaches at every level back in those days or hitting coaches. You had a manager and you had a player coach, you know, a guy that was the bench coach, but he was also on the active roster. And so you just had a roving pitching coach that you would see every couple of months. You might see him, you know, once every 2 months. And even then, back then, you know, at least from my experience in the organization I was in, if you weren't a high prospect, you weren't getting a lot of time out of that guy. And there was a banker in Pawtucket. His name was Chet Nichols, and he was a left-handed pitcher with the Boston Braves. Back when the Boston Braves were in existence, so he's a big league pitcher, and he used to take me aside, and he was the first one really to ever grab me and pull me aside after a game and say, "Hey, look, let's talk about this. Why did you do this? Hmm. What made you pitch to this guy? What made you make this particular pitch in this particular spot, as opposed to maybe you face the righty with second and third and a base open,
and he hit a double in the gap, as opposed to maybe pitching to the lefty with the bases loaded and the game on the line, and when you maybe have a the advantage. And he's really the first one that made me start to think about the game a little bit. And so I give him a lot of credit for my adjustment as a pitcher. And then, you know, when I started to lose velocity a little bit and develop the changeup, then I started to, you know, think a little bit more and, try and figure things out.
Well, I'll tell you, it turned out pretty well. It turned out in a spot now in the Cardinals Hall of Fame. And again, congratulations on that, John. It's a pleasure getting a chance to catch up. We appreciate you doing this. Happy New Year to you. And of course, hopefully later on in the summer, things are normal. We'll see you guys around the ballpark when it's time to celebrate your class and then the one that'll be coming up again later on this year too.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, it'd be good just to get back to normal. All things else aside, you know, it's just get this stuff behind us. It'd be good.
And many thanks to John Tudor for joining us here on the Countdown to Opening Day show. I want to remind you that, well, right now it's a little chilly outside and we're all dreaming of the summer months when we can enjoy time together outside. Keep in mind Cardinals special events. They offer all sorts of unique options for celebrating outdoors at beautiful Busch Stadium, from cocktails on the warning track to brunch in the bullpen. Your group will be sure to take memories and make memories that will last a lifetime. Go to cardinals.com/events to find out more. Stick around. Coming up next, we'll talk to David Kaplan from Chicago. What's going on with the Cubs? We'll get the latest from Cap. Coming up, it's the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day show presented by Amarin on the Cardinals Radio Network. Countdown to Opening Day show presented by Amarin here on the Cardinals Radio Network. Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler with you. Happy to have Dave Kaplan with us coming at us from Chicago. Of course, He is the co-host of Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 up in Chicago. Works for NBC Sports Chicago as well. And thank you for doing this, man. Happy New Year to you.
Well, it's an honor to be on with you guys. I always love coming out in St. Louis, Missouri, and ruffling the feathers of Redbird Nation.
You have been a busy man this offseason. Both your teams have been quite busy. The White Sox have a new manager. They've done some things on the broadcast side, and the Cubs have decided they wanted to raise the white flag in January compared to April with the moves that they've had. What's been the most intriguing thing that you've seen between those two teams?
You've got one team, the Cubs, who hold the lion's share of the fan base. They look across town and they say, wait a minute. That other team's really good. They could win the World Series this year with a couple of astute moves. Yeah, let's trade you, Darvish, and let's get two 17-year-olds that might in 5 years make the big leagues, and that would be a fast timetable. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised. And then when you factor in that the Cubs haven't done anything to improve their team over the past 2.5-3 years other than Daniel Descalso, who was a complete and total failure here, they've done nothing, literally nothing. And they have the 27th-ranked farm system. And yet, we're in a division where no one's trying to win. That's the amazing thing.
We're looking at the four teams that looked like they were contenders last year. Milwaukee and St. Louis are kind of doing the same thing right now, which is not much, just waiting to see how the market plays. The Reds have subtracted. I don't know, the Cubs haven't gone full fire sale, but based on how you're putting it and based on what I know from my friends that live up there in Chicago, there are a lot of people that are just not happy with anything to do with how that thing's being run.
You have a family that if I had told Cubs fans the day I was there, I emceed the press conference, October 30, 2009. That's the day the Ricketts family took control. If I had told Cub fans that night on my radio show, guess what? Give them 7 years. You're going to have a fully rebuilt stadium. You're going to have brand new facility at spring training that is as good as there is in the game. Guess what? You're going to have a brand new facility in the Dominican, which is as good as there is in the game. And you're not only going to beat the St. Louis Cardinals in the playoffs, you're going to win the World Series in 2016 in an epic World Series. People would have said, where do we start building the statues? And I like Tom Ricketts. I get along with the family very well because I deal with them on a baseball front. But you've got Laura Ricketts, who is as left-wing, and I'm not criticizing her for it. I'm just stating a fact. She's as left-wing as they come. You've got Pete Ricketts, one of the board members, who's the ultra-right-wing governor of the state of Nebraska. Todd Ricketts, another board member, who is the fundraising chairman of Reelect Trump 2020. And then you've got Tom, who stays out of politics but leans to the right. Oh, and then the dad has some bad emails come out. He funded a super PAC to try and get Obama beat. And so people just, they don't know these people, but their perception of the Ricketts family has changed dramatically. Now you have the owner say, biblical losses, which, when you lose almost $200 million, I guess someone could call that. People don't want to hear a billionaire cry poor. They just don't. They want to come home from their 9-to-5 job, crack a beer, eat some food, and watch their Cubs win. And they don't want to hear, we can't afford that guy. So that kind of gives you a nutshell of what's going on up here.
Cap, were you surprised when they decided to scale back on finances? I know they made a lot of investments in the neighborhood around Wrigley Field, but were you surprised that they scaled back as quickly as they did and continue to offer up players that they don't appear to want to play in the future?
I was not surprised, Michael, that they traded Yu Darvish. And in and of itself, I think it's actually a very intelligent move. Let's not discuss yet what they got. But Yu Darvish is going to be 35 this season. Yu Darvish has never had a successful full season with the Chicago Cubs. He came here in 18. He went on the injured list in May, had arm surgery, the year was over. And everyone went, what a horrible signing. That guy's a bust. The next year, he's awful until July 1, and then he decides to start using his cutter and his fastball more, and he has a sensational second half. And then we have a pandemic, and he, what did he start? 13, 14 times, maybe?
Yeah.
12? Yep. Finishes second in the Cy Young in a 60-game season. Everyone's like, oh, my God, he's the greatest pitcher in the world. Well, how about putting a full season together? So the San Diego Padres, and I confirmed this with multiple sources, they were the only team in baseball, and every team got a call. Everyone.
Wow.
You want Yu Darvish. They're the only one that said they would take $52 million of the 59 or 60 left on his deal. They called the White Sox. They
wow.
called everybody. And everyone said, yeah, I'll give you a couple prospects, but I'm not taking all that money. Padres are in it to win it. So I don't have a problem moving a almost 35-year-old guy and getting back. What you got back is okay. Who knows? The day they traded Fernando Tatis from the White Sox for James Shields, he was 17.
Yeah.
He's turned into maybe the best player in the sport or one of them. So who knows what you get? My point is, if you're trying to win next year, you're not taking 17-year-olds.
Right. That's exactly a good point. You know, it's funny that the riff you just went on, Cap, about perspective is interesting because I know Klaibs and I have probably had that same conversation here. You know, you've got a lot of uneasiness in the fan base because the offense isn't good enough and the division is there for the taking and nothing's happening. Molina and Waino are still sitting out there. And then you look back on it and you're like, yeah, and you've also got two World Series in the last 15 years and you've had one losing season in 15 years. It's interesting that no matter how you want to look at it, both of these franchises, it kind of feels like you're in a similar place. You're not tearing it down, but you're also not going for it either, and that's got fans kind of on the edge.
Our fan base here feels like, hold on a second, you are billionaires. You actually just sold a ton of your TD Ameritrade to Charles Schwab, and you made like $2 or $3 billion. We don't want to hear that you can't afford to compete. Now, do I think they should get under the luxury tax? Yes, you can't go 3 years in a row in the tax, or it's the penalties are so onerous that it really is a detriment to your franchise. I get that. But you're telling me that you can't go out and be competitive? Like, you couldn't have made the trade to get Lance Lynn, who's a really quality pitcher, instead of the White Sox? He makes $9 million a year. You lost a ton of money off the books. John Lester, you saved after his buyout $15 million. You saved $13 on Tyler Chatwood, another astute signing that we made. You had Brandon Morrow's money fall off the books. Like, you cut Kyle Schwarber. There's a bunch of guys that are off the books. You traded Darvish. Why can't you replace him? That's not how they're thinking of it this year.
All right, I want to go to the north side for a minute and talk to you about the White Sox. You and I talked right after they hired Tony La Russa. I know it wasn't a popular hire with regard to the media, but how are things starting to settle in as they start to really put an interesting roster together?
There are some, you know, fans that are still like, I can't believe Jerry Reinsdorf hired his buddy. That said, his buddy is one of the great managers in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
And I've talked to three or four of the players since then, and all of them have said, I'll be honest with you, man, I didn't know what to think when we hired him. He's been nothing but awesome to deal with on the phone. He's bilingual, and so he's connected with some of the Latin players. The Cuban players especially have this really close bond with Moncada and Luis Robert and Jose Abreu.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people are starting to go, well, if you're going to add all these really good players, I think I could probably deal with Tony being the manager. And if they win, there's going to be the biggest take that party from the executive suite over there. I tell you that.
And again, thanks to David Kaplan from ESPN 1000 and NBC Sports Chicago for jumping in and painting a little picture of what's going on the north side. Cardinals rivals to the north, certainly having their own version of an interesting offseason. I want to remind you that the 2021 Cardinals Care Winter Warm-Up is going virtual this year. Tickets for virtual experiences with your favorite current and former Cardinals are on sale now. Great prices on those, too. For more information, go to cardinals.com/WWU. Stick around. Up next, we're going to give away a 2021 calendar right here on the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day Show, presented by Amron on the Cardinals Radio Network.
On, nobody out. The 2-0 pitch.
Here's a swing, a long fly ball into left field. This is going to leave the park.
This is
the Countdown to Opening Day show, presented by Amron.
That ball's hit deep to left. This one's going to be out of here.
Get up, baby. Get up. Get up. Get up. Oh, yeah.
This one is going to go. Oh, my. He got all of that one.
Now, Mike Claiborne and Kevin Wheeler and the Countdown to Opening Day show, presented by Amron on the Cardinals Radio Network.
All right, kicking off the second hour here on the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day show, presented by Amron here on the Cardinals Radio Network. Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler with you here. Claib's already knocked out a great hour with John Rooney and John Tudor, David Kaplan. We'll talk to the Cardinals general manager, Mike Gersh, coming up next. Tom Herr a little later on this hour. So we got a lot going on here in the first show of the new year. And, you know, we get to this time of year, Claib's. This is, as we talked about with John Rooney a little earlier, it's the time of year where we're starting to count Hall of Fame ballots and keep track of who may or may not get in. And, you know, it's tracking this year, Claves, like we may not get anybody in. There are a bunch of guys close, but this may be a year where we don't have any new additions.
I'm beginning to feel that same way, Kevin. If we get one, maybe two, I don't know who it would be because they're all starting to kind of level off. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, the Hall of Fame, for me, for baseball, has become fascinating and yet frustrating in what the criteria is at this point and how some people can move up the ladder, you know, when they've been said before that they'd never get in for one reason or another, maybe because they were on PEDs or they were doing this. And now all of a sudden they gain momentum. And there are a lot of guys who are probably on the cusp of being what we would call Hall of Famers. If we just look at the numbers across the board, be it 500 home runs or 3,000 hits, whatever your gold standard might be, we don't have a lot of those guys. So we have guys that are right on the cusp. And it really comes down to me of actually watching them play and seeing the impact that they had on the game and how good they were in their position, no matter what it is, during their time of play. And I think that's what it's going to end up coming down to. I just don't know if there are enough voters that are willing to buy into that.
Yeah, they're you know, it's complicated right now because there are three or four guys that are the leading percentage, guys getting the leading percentage of votes that have problems that people want to talk about, right? I mean, obviously Bonds, Clemens, and Schilling. Now, they're both, all three of them are well over 70%, but they're not at the necessary 75%. They are close enough to where it's possible if there's a late run of ballots going in their direction, because when we're looking at this, and by the way, Ryan Thibodeau does a great job of this. People can follow him on Twitter. It's at not Mr. Tibbs, but the voters all submit their ballots to him, some of them anonymously, some of them put their names on it, but he tabulates it all and gives us an idea of where we are. And, you know, he's got about 30% of the ballots submitted to him now, and with that in, or at that number, nobody's getting in, but Bonds is at 74%, Clemens is at 73.5%, Schilling's at 72.5%, and my favorite development in all of this is the progress that Scott Rowland's made, Claves. I know we talked about it with John Rooney, but he's almost at 70% right now, and he's only in his fourth year. When guys get to that upper 60 to 70% range, they get in usually.
No, I agree with you. And when you look at his body of work, whether it was in Philadelphia and St. Louis, the two cities he spent the most time in, there wasn't a guy that was better than him at that time as far as playing third base and what he meant to his ball clubs. And I agree with you. I think people have kind of pushed him up the ladder, and rightfully so. You know, third base, there aren't a lot of third basemen in the Hall of Fame.
Nope.
I mean, it's one of those positions where you just don't have a lot of them. But I think his body of work, certainly what we saw here in St. Louis, and obviously the reason why the Cardinals traded for him from Philadelphia, would give me the reason that he is a Hall of Famer. And I think it's going to happen sooner than later.
Yeah, and again, it doesn't look like it's going to be this year, but it certainly looks like it's going to happen within his 10-year window. And, you know, one of my greater beefs, Claves, about the way things have gone historically, and I'm hoping that they're changing, because what we're seeing with some of these players, the tabulations changing, is more new voters are coming in. You know, a few years back, they kind of cleaned up the mess of people that were still voting but hadn't covered baseball in like 10 or 12 years or weren't still active. So they kind of cleaned the voter rolls up a little bit. There are a lot of newer ones that are coming on board, and they seem to be more analytically inclined. And that's actually something that helped Larry Walker and it helped Tim Raines. And it looks like it's going to help a guy like Scott Rowland, who, you know, contributes both sides of the ball, right? He's a positive both with offense and defense, and there just aren't that many people in history that are really a highly positive contributor with both the glove and the bat.
Hey, do you see anybody else that would fit in this category of Scott Rolen that's on the ballot? There's some intriguing names that are out there that you know, as I mentioned earlier, they may not have the 500 home runs or 3,000 hits, but when you watch them play, you look around, you say, there wasn't anybody better than this guy at his position. And I think we've got a lot of those guys. So do we adjust the qualifications that we've been going by for all these years to accommodate these guys? And I think that's where the question is.
I'm with you. And look, one of those guys for me is actually a contemporary of Scott Rolen and a similar player, and it's Andrew Jones.
I mean, that's the guy I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Jones is arguably one of the handful of the greatest defensive center fielders this game has seen. I mean, looking at the number of gold gloves, and by the way, all of his gold gloves were in a row, right? So he dominated a period of time, right? He dominated.
He was in the Aussie division. He's in the Aussie category. Yeah, just write it down because he's not going to have that bad of a year. Trust me.
That's right. He had 10 straight gold gloves. I mean, like, and in that time, a 50 home run season, a 40 home run season. Now, was he amazing after that? No, injuries kind of caught up with him in his early 30s, and you know, we forget he broke in as a 19-year-old.
So played as a kid, right?
Yeah, and he may played in the World Series as a 19, 20-year-old. But you know, again, he's a guy 400 homers, 1300 ribbies. He's 10 gold gloves, and I really do think that we need to do a better job of getting players like this. And to me, this is the argument that I made for Larry Walker. It's like, how can you be a strong, outstanding, all-around player for a long period of time and not be a Hall of Famer? It's just nonsense.
I agree. And I hope that people will have a different opinion of how this selection process works, because there are some Hall of Fame-worthy guys that are out there that just don't get their due because they don't blow their own horn. They're not in a big market. And, you know, they're not on TV, and we have a tendency to overlook how good those guys were. And again, I go back to my original point. I would really like to have more weight bared on the fact that these guys were actually witnessed by some of these voters.
It's chilly outside, and we're all dreaming of the summer months when we can enjoy a little bit more time together outside. And Cardinal Special Events offers all sorts of unique options for celebrating outdoors at beautiful Busch Stadium. From cocktails on the warning track to brunch in the bullpen, your group will be sure to make memories that'll last a lifetime. You can visit cardinals.com/events to find out more. All right, stick around. We got a lot more to do in this hour. In a little bit, we're going to catch up with a Cardinals Hall of Famer, a new one, Tommy Herr. Up next, we'll catch up with General Manager Mike Gersh here on the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day show presented by Ameren on the Cardinals Radio Network. All right, we continue on with the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day show presented by Ameren here on the Cardinals Radio Network. Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler with you here. And Claibs, one of the nice things about moving into 2021 is hopefully we'll get the chance to do some things more normally. In 2020, we didn't quite get the chance, at least in terms of doing the ceremonies and everything, to celebrate the Hall of Fame class, the Cardinals Hall of Fame class of 2020. But we're doing that here virtually, and of course, we'll hope to do that coming up this summer. And happy to have Tom Herr with us, a member of that 2020 class. And first of all, Tom, Happy New Year and congratulations, man. That is one heck of an honor.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and Happy New Year to you guys. It was quite an honor for me just to be on the ballot, and have Whitey to thank for that. You know, he's been fighting for me the last few times around, trying to get me on the ballot.
What was it like for you when you got the call? Because I know a lot of people, when they go through this Hall of Fame process, whether it's the Cardinals Hall of Fame or virtually any Hall of Fame, the waiting and the anticipation and the hope that goes into it. But what was it like when you got the phone call?
You know, it was a great, great day for our whole family. We were ecstatic, to say the least, and very thrilled and stunned, really, quite honestly. I was stunned about it because, you know, there were two National Hall of Famers on that ballot, and Lee Smith and Steve Carlton, and, of course, you know, some other great players, Keith Hernandez and Morris and Edgar Renteria, and you know, it was a good class, and for John and I to get in there was a thrill for both of us, and neat because, you know, we were teammates and important parts of those great teams in the 80s. So it was really a thrill for me to get that call.
Tom, take us back to your early days as a big leaguer. So, you know, 79, 80, 81, really before the Cardinals became Whitey Ball, before it became what we all know it to be now. How much did things change over those first few years of your big league career?
Well, the culture changed. You know, when I was coming up through the minor leagues, you know, I was an undrafted free agent, signed out of Legion Ball at the end of the summer after I graduated from high school. So I didn't come to spring training till the following spring, which was 1975. And, you know, you talk about starting at the bottom of the barrel. I mean, I was basically a nobody. And, you know, that first year I learned how to switch hit. And that was big for me because that gave me something to really work on and spend the extra time at. And I was a speed guy at that time, so hitting from the left side was advantageous to me. And, you know, I was always able to make contact. I certainly couldn't drive the ball from the left side, but I could make contact. I could put it in play, and I had a chance, you know, if I could put it in play to be able to beat balls out or whatever. And, you know, at that time, the switch hitters were it was a huge thing in the Cardinal organization. There were many switch hitters at the big league level back in that era. You had guys like Jerry Mumphrey and Gary Templeton, Ted Simmons, mm-hmm. Tony Scott. You know, so they were kind of in the business of developing switch hitters. So that was kind of a feather in my cap. I think that I kind of got. You know, got on my way with the switch hitting thing. And, you know, as I progressed through the minor league system, you know, George Kissel was very, you know, he was, I'm not sure what his title was back then, but, you know, he was basically the minor league coordinator is what I would call him, you know, and he was, you know, he kind of took me under his wing and, you know, I was fortunate enough to have managers like, Tom Burgess, my rookie year, who taught me a lot of things, and of course Hal Lanier was instrumental in the early part of my career, and you know, a lot of guys. Buzzy Keller was a base running guru that really helped, and so, you know, I got good instruction coming up through. When I finally got called up to the big leagues in '79, you know, it was kind of an end of a era in Cardinal history. You know, that's Lou Brock was at the end of his career. And, you know, it was kind of a transitional phase between the old and some of the new faces that were there. And then, of course, the big change came when Whitey took over, and he kind of sat back and looked at things and decided that, you know, playing in Busch Stadium, it didn't make a lot of sense to try to load up with power hitters because it certainly wasn't a good venue for that. And of course, the whole National League was like that. You know, you had a lot of the cookie cutter AstroTurf stadiums that were basically all the same. They were big ballparks and fast surfaces. So, you know, his success in Kansas City playing in that type of facility was to attack it with speed, which helps you both offensively and defensively. So, you know, he kind of brought that philosophy with him, and, you know, that fit my style of play, which was good for me. And, you know, with the backing of the people that I mentioned before playing for them in the minor leagues, you know, Hub Kittle was another guy that was familiar with me. So I had some, you know, I had some people in the farm system that were in my corner, and you know, Whitey gave me a chance to play and decided I was the guy that could, you know, fit into that kind of, you know, makeup that he wanted. You know, I had some really good years in the minor leagues, you know, stole a lot of bases, hit for high average. So, you know, the credentials were there, but stepping over that threshold to the big leagues is always difficult, no matter how good you were in the minor leagues. So, you know, it took me a couple of years to adjust to, you know, facing guys like Tom Seaver and Steve Carlton and, you know, guys that you kind of grow up idolizing. And now you're trying to get a hit off Nolan Ryan. You know, it's So it was very intimidating for me early in my career. But we had success there, obviously, in 82 right off the bat. That was only my second year of being up there and playing regularly. And, you know, I was a minor part of that team. You know, I played every day and certainly, you know, moved throughout the lineup, hit at the top of the lineup some, hit at the bottom of the lineup some. And, so, you know, that was kind of a year for me to really learn a lot. And I obviously got better throughout the middle part of the 80s, but it was awesome to experience winning a world championship. And, you know, I was used to winning. You know, my teams that I was on in the minor leagues won at every level. You know, we won a Appalachian League title in Johnson City. We won a Florida State League title in St. Pete. We won the Texas League when I played in Arkansas, and we won the American Association when I played in Springfield. So I was used to winning. And so for me to come up and contribute to that winning atmosphere at the big leagues was huge.
Once again, many thanks to 2020 Cardinals Hall of Famer Tom Herr for joining us here on the show. And, of course, great conversation with John Tudor last hour as well. Always fun when we can catch up with some Cardinals legends. I want to remind you, for the best baseball content and hot stove updates this offseason, follow at MLB on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. All right, stick around. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Michael Hall. We'll tell you all about what's going on with the virtual winter warm-up. That's next up here on the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day Show, presented by Ameren on the Cardinals Radio Network. On the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day Show, presented by Ameren here on the Cardinals Radio Network. Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler with you here. Happy to be joined once again by Michael Hall, the Cardinals Vice President of Cardinals Care and Community Relations. And, of course, Happy New Year to you, Michael. Last time we talked, it was 2020. Now it's 2021. We appreciate you joining us again. I know last time we talked, too, we teased some of what will be coming for the virtual winter warm-up. The beauty of talking now is we know a little bit more about how that's going to look, and we can tell people how they can be a part of it.
Mike, Kevin, thank you for having me. Happy New Year to both of you. Yes, we did tease that a little bit, didn't we? And now where those experiences are actually on sale. And, you know, we're really excited about the lineup, if you will, that we've put together. There's a total of 14 different experiences or opportunities for fans to be able to, you know, see and hear from our players while, you know, we're on break between seasons and still be able to try to continue that tradition of winter warm-up, although doing it in a virtual space.
And, Michael, this is obviously a new thing for everyone. What do you think the fans are going to really get a kick out of? Because, as I mentioned, it's a first time for all of us, but I'm sure there's some things that you've run across that you say, you know what, this will be something we may have to stick with from now on, because I think people are going to have a good time with it.
Yeah, I think that, one, there's, as I mentioned, there's 14 different separate experiences, and each one of them has its own particular theme. And some of these themes are baseball related, and there's a couple of them that really aren't. It gives you an opportunity to kind of see the players in their home environment, if you will, or wherever they may be. They may not necessarily be at home, but just in a different environment, you know, not in uniform, not necessarily talking baseball. You know, we're doing one, for instance, with Paul DeJong. It's called In the Kitchen with Paul DeJong. He's really into cooking. He's an avid cooker, and that's what the experience is going to be about, is him talking about his love for cooking and sharing some of his favorite recipes. And that's going to be moderated by Brad Thompson. And, you know, that's just an example of one of the experiences that we've put together. So I think it's an opportunity for fans to not only get some of that baseball talk that we know that our fans love, but also get to see a different side of the players as well.
So people looking for information, it's easy. Just go to cardinals.com/WWU, and they're all listed there. And I think that's the thing that's most attractive to me, Michael, when I look at this, is you have the combination of the personality side, right? There's a session with Dexter Fowler and Harrison Bader and Jack Flaherty on the best-dressed guys on the team. You mentioned one of those with cooking with Paul DeJong. There's also one that's kind of like a newlywed game with the couple of players and their wives. But then there's also the hardcore baseball stuff for people that want that. You know, stuff with the infielders, you know, doing some instructional stuff. I know there's some catching instruction thing going on there. People can learn about the broadcast booth. I really think that the variety of things can fit really what anybody might be looking for.
Yeah, and we tried to do that purposely. We know that our fans are, you know, our fans are great, and they really know baseball and they love baseball. But you know, they also love our players, and they want to know a little bit more about them. And this virtual experience gives us an opportunity to do that, where you don't really get that opportunity at an in person warm up. And, you know, a couple of them that you mentioned, and, you know, you guys are part of a couple of them. I know Mike is moderating the infielder insight is what we call it. And, you know, that involves all of our infielders and just, you know, talking baseball with them. And then the broadcast one that you mentioned, Kevin, you're been gracious enough to moderate for us and just get some insight of what it's like to set up for a game, what mm-hmm. our broadcasters go through and how they prepare to do a game. We thought that would be interesting for fans. And so we tried to sprinkle in a little bit of everything, and hopefully our fans find it attractive.
All right, so we kind of laid the groundwork on what's in store. What's the best way people can get involved, get online, and how does that work? Because I think what you'll see, instead of having those fans in the hotel, they may be around the computer taking this all in as a group. And I'm sure with certain things that are going to be out there, the specialty elements are certainly something people are going to want to latch on to. So what's the best way?
Yeah, the best way, and really the only way, is to go to cardinals.com/WWU. What we've done is we've put everything that is happening as far as winter warm-up is concerned on one page at one site for everyone's convenience. You know, currently our 50-50 is currently running. It has been running. I mentioned that the last time that we chatted. Currently the total pot is up over $10,000. You can find the information about that on the site. Currently, autographs are still on sale, autograph baseballs and photos. That's on the site. And then now that our virtual experiences are up and running, you can find out the descriptions of each of the experiences, the cost, the time, all that's up on the site. And then on winter warm-up weekend, when the virtual experiences actually happen, our silent auctions will actually start as well. And next week we'll get the list of the silent auction items up on the site as well. So cardinals.com/WWU is where you'll find the information about all the things that are part of winter warm-up in 2021.
I got to say, Michael, you guys did a pretty fantastic job in putting all of this together and giving everybody an opportunity. And look, these experiences, the virtual experiences too, pretty nice price point for people. And we're talking 15, 20, 25 bucks if you want to be a part of these things.
Well, thank you, Kevin. We appreciate that compliment. And when you talk about the pricing, I just hope fans realize, you know, it's $15, $20 for the family. You know,
right.
Mike, you mentioned gathering around the computer screen or however you may view the content. You know, everyone can sit down and view the experience for that price point. So hopefully fans will find something that they're interested in and participate. And we hope that, you know, fans are excited about it. And again, just to remind everyone, this is a fundraiser for us. This is for Cardinals Care, and this is for kids in the community. And the money raised goes back into the community to support kids and young people. So we encourage fans to go to cardinals.com/WWU, take a look, and hopefully you'll find something you like.
Always fun having Michael Hall with us to tell us a bit about what's going on with Cardinals Care. Obviously a great cause, raising money for children's charities in St. Louis. And again, a reminder that you can just go to cardinals.com/WWU to check out all of the different virtual experiences. There are a lot of different ways. And as I mentioned with Michael, it's a pretty good price point. I mean, you're talking $15, $20, $25, and a whole group of you can gather around the computer or TV, however you want to set it up, and enjoy some of those great programs. Stick around. Coming up next, we'll wrap up the show and give away another 2021 Cardinals calendar right here on the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day show presented by Ameren on the Cardinals Radio Network. The 2021 Cardinals calendar celebrates 12 epic moments in Cardinals history and gets you ready for baseball with the spring training and regular season schedules in place. You can get yours at area grocers and retailers, or you can get it by calling 314-345-9000. Now, that's how most of you will be able to get it. One of you could get really lucky right now. We're going to give away the 2021 Cardinals calendar to our first caller, at 314-531-1120. That's 314-531-1120. First caller gets the 2021 Cardinals calendar for tonight. Many thanks to all of our guests that joined us here on the Countdown Show today. Happy to talk ball with John Rooney and John Tudor and Tommy Herr. Many thanks to Mike Gersh for jumping in and joining us as well. David Kaplan from Chicago giving us the latest on what's going on with the Cubs. And happy to have the first show of the new year in the books. And, of course, we're looking at, we think, spring training in about 6 weeks. And as we build up, hopefully we'll get some momentum going, some off-season moves happening, and have a little bit more to kind of lay the groundwork for what 2021 is going to look like as we move forward. Many thanks to everybody for tuning in. And, of course, on behalf of Mike Claiborne, I just want to say thanks to everybody for checking us out. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you next week here on the Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day Show, presented by Ameren on the Cardinals Radio Network.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits. Make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.